It's 11 in the morning, and time for another spotlight here at Red River Radio. Good morning to you. I'm Kermit Poling. Joining me in the studio, the music director of the Shreveport Symphony Orchestra, Michael Butterman, along with me today. And Michael, as always, great to see you.
Great to see you, too. Good to be back with you, Kermit.
And, you know, summer's over now. Time to start off another
season. Yeah, absolutely. We're excited to get things going. It's been too long, frankly. And we have a really exciting season this year. And this concert coming up tomorrow, I think certainly gets things off to a really energetic start. One thing in particular is that we are this year performing mostly at First Baptist Church in Shreveport. The Riverview Theater is undergoing some renovation really the whole season long. And I look at this as a great opportunity because the space there, first of all, it's visually beautiful to see, but it's acoustically very special. It really is a flattering space for certain kinds of sounds, particularly strings and so on. It's very reverberant, and I mean, that produces presents some challenges too.
We talked about this a few years back, not on mic or anything like that, and you said it reminded you of like a great European hall.
Well, it does because of the shape, essentially. If you look at places like the Musikverein and the Concertgebouw and even Boston Symphony Hall, these renowned acoustic environments, they are essentially the same basic shape as First Baptist, a shoebox, long, tall ceilings, rather narrow, and so it is a proven shape for great sound. And not only do we have great sound there, we have also the possibility of, because of all the cameras that the church has, of presenting images on the walls behind the orchestra. They can be either pre-existing images, photographs, and so on, or live images of the musicians. And we'll have a combination of both, actually, at the concert on Saturday.
Yeah, that's a whole other aspect of things. And so if you're further back in the hall, for example, you can get a close-up. And as we're sitting in the orchestra playing, I'm playing this one, I can look up and I can see images of you. But really, they were practicing, focusing on different parts of the orchestra. It's kind of a cool added dimension to coming to a concert.
It's a little bit like the Jumbotron
exactly.
When you go to the game. You know, you see the perspective of the whole field, but then you can also see the replay of what have you. We're not doing replays here, but yeah, you can see the pictures of the conductor. You can see images of the soloist. We have a fantastic soloist, and also just close-up images of the orchestra itself, so that we have some. It just makes you kind of feel more connected to the. What's going on on stage.
And this concert is all about imagery anyway, both visual, of course, and sonic.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, the best-known work on the program is undoubtedly the Pictures at an Exhibition that you just played a little bit of right there. This work by Mussorgsky, which was inspired by an exhibition of paintings and drawings by his artist friend Victor Hartmann back in the late 1800s, originally a piano work, and one that attracted the attention of lots and lots of orchestrators and arrangers over the years. Most famously of, we're playing the version that is orchestrated by Ravel. This was actually a commission from the conductor, Serge Koussevitzky, of the Boston Symphony. His version, Ravel's version, is certainly, I think, the most frequently played and the best known of all of those orchestrations. Ravel, of course, a master orchestrator. Your listeners will know his famous Bolero, among other works. But this one really makes full use of all the timbres that a symphony can produce. It has a rather unusual step of including a solo saxophone, which for an orchestra is not that common in one of the movements. Back to your point about the images and so on, we have images of the original Victor Hartmann paintings and drawings. There are 10 movements, and I think there are extant 5 of these images. So we are presenting those as we're playing the piece, and then kind of letting the, after about a minute or so, we'll cut to images of the live orchestra happening. And for those movements for which we do not have the original Victor Hartmann, we have put together images that we think are at least suggestive of the titles.
Yes.
Right. So there's a little bit of artistic license going on there, but just it felt like we wanted to have a complete sense of first a visual image, of artistic image, and then the live shots, as I said.
Yeah.
And this is a piece that really exploits all the softs and louds that are possible for an orchestra. The end of it, the Great Gate of Kiev, really almost sonically overwhelming, and especially in that beautiful acoustic, it's it really fills up the space, I'll have to say.
Go, speaking of the,
you are really
of the great,
very good.
Hey, I'm awake this morning for some odd reason. No, but just like you say, I mean, you can just hear, you know, just with the full brass and all of that, and the winds joining in. I think, I wouldn't say it necessarily is the best known movement from, because the whole piece is so popular. But if you recognize this piece, that's what we're talking about.
Absolutely,
great piece of orchestral music.
No question. It's got a promenade theme that links some of the movements. The suggestion of an observer of the exhibit who walks from painting to painting, and we see a transformation of that theme as the piece goes along. Wow. Sort of an unusual piece in that it's about walking, but it's in a slightly asymmetric meter, 5 beats, then 6 beats, and 5 beats, and so on. Yeah. But as I was saying, it has some ability to kind of let you know emotionally what the observer's reaction has been to the painting that they have just seen, and perhaps how they are transitioning into the emotional world of the next painting. So that at the beginning has a certain kind of, I guess, just sort of straightforward approach. But as the piece goes along, that theme comes back in lots of different shades and sure. Sort of impressions of its former self. Really a brilliant work that I'm excited to present. First time in my time as music director here that we've played the piece. So very glad to be presenting it. Now, the first half of the concert is, I would say, related to it in a couple of ways. First of all, we have a fantastic concerto. The first concerto by Dmitri Shostakovich for violin and orchestra. That's related in the sense that it's another Russian composer. And we are delighted to be welcoming the world-class violinist Karen Gomio as our soloist. This piece of Shostakovich is really kind of symphonic in scope. In fact, it's a little longer, all told, than the Mussorgsky. And it is unlike a typical concerto. It's written in four movements. Concertos are more often just three movements. This one starts off rather slowly and in a kind of somber fashion. It's called a nocturne. It feels like almost a suppression of emotion somehow. And I think it's important to know that Shostakovich wrote this in the late 40s during a time when he was really under a lot of pressure. He'd been censured by Stalin and the Soviet authorities for writing music that was not wholly supportive of the goals of the Soviet state, essentially.
In fact, a lot of music was being censored, and he held it back for a long time.
He did, because he knew, frankly, that not only would it not be well received, but it might not actually it might get him in a lot of trouble. Let's put it this way.
Which is you know, from our perspective now, kind of hard to imagine. But literally, his life was on the line.
Absolutely.
Not just at risk of this piece, but, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, he'd gotten in trouble before. And
right. He'd been warned, so to speak.
Yes.
And he knew that crossing a line would be calamitous for him. So this was a work that he nonetheless felt a need to compose. And it was eventually premiered roughly 7 years or so after he had finished it in 1955, shortly after the death of Stalin, shortly after the premiere of another work, his 10th Symphony, which shares a lot of this same quality, which is that he is expressing, I think, his own individuality in these pieces. He uses a motive, which really is his own personal musical motto. It's D, E flat, C, and then B natural, bom, 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 which spells, it's hard to explain, but it spells D-S-C-H. I could go into that, but it's a little involved. But in the German spelling of his name, it's Dimitri, and then the first three letters of his last name, D-S-C-H. So that motive is heard very prominently in the 10th Symphony. At the end, it's almost as if, hey, Stalin, you're gone, and I'm still here. I'm asserting myself, and and this is me, and you couldn't keep me down, or I guess you did, but now you're gone, and I'm going to be who I am. And this concerto involves that same motive in the second movement, the scherzo, and also a little bit at the end of the cadenza as well. And I guess it's not quite clear whether they were, maybe it actually was written in the violin concerto before the 10th Symphony, because the violin concerto was written, as I said, some years before it was actually saw the light of day. Second movement, incredibly fiery, scherzo, demonic almost in its intensity and fierce quality. The third movement, a Passacaglia, which is a piece based on a short recurring motive in the low strain, or in the basses, basically, the low frequencies of the orchestra. Then that gives way to a cadenza, one of the most demanding and maybe one of the more extended cadenzas in the concerto repertoire, that then links directly without pause into kind of a burlesque, the last movement, which has little elements of, oh, I don't know, almost Kabalevsky feeling from time to time.
I think exactly the same thing. And the cadenza is really does work as a great transition because it builds in all that energy to lead from the more somber, whatever you want to call it, Passacaglia to that crazy last movement.
Yeah, it's almost like it's a frenzy at the end, but it seems celebratory to me, with a little, you know, dark overtones, I suppose. But there's something of a relief almost in in that last movement. So a really impressive piece, I think, full of intensity, but some lighter moments as well, and one that will be played brilliantly by Karen, I'm sure.
Yeah, and she has, she has really become one of the most important younger violinists of our time. And from my understanding from her, you know, she was born in Japan but grew up in Canada. Mm-hmm. And you seem to have a link with Canadian performers coming down here. We've had several that have been featured. But she has an outstanding career. She performs with all the major orchestras. And there's a fascinating documentary that she did for Japanese television, which is available. You can look it up. And I think if you look up Karen Gamio and documentary or violin, it's about her violin. And the violin itself that she performs on is one of the rare Stradivarius violins. She had a wonderful situation where a patron obtained one for her, which gives you an idea of what the patron thought of her performing.
Yes.
And it's an amazing instrument. The documentary talks all about Strad and how he created his instruments and how we just don't understand why they're such great instruments, no matter how much we've been able to study them to this point. The secrets are still locked within whatever, if you want to call it, the soul of the violin.
Right.
So this is going to be a wonderful opportunity to hear a great instrument performed, on by this amazing violinist.
Right, and listeners can come a little ahead of time. The concert's at 7:30. They can come at 6:40 and hear from me, but also hear from Karen a little bit about the instrument and about this piece and anything else, I suppose, that you want to ask. And that will be happening at the chapel, if I'm not mistaken.
Frost Chapel.
At First Baptist, so right there, very easy to get to. I do want to talk about the first piece a little bit. The first piece on the program is by a composer named Tan Dun, who is an Academy Award-winning composer. He wrote the score to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, but he's also well-known as a composer of concert works and is renowned for his kind of expanding of the tone palette of a symphony orchestra, writing a lot of works for, Asian instruments, Chinese instruments, water percussion, and the like.
Right.
This particular piece brings in technology, which is to say, we are going to ask the audience to not put away their cell phones quite so soon, but instead to actually play their cell phones during the opening of this piece. So there is a sound file that you can find either on our website or by coming to the concert. There'll be a QR code that you can scan with your cell phone and download this short little sound file, which is a sound or a file of basically bird sounds.
Yeah.
And they will be, the audience will be asked to kind of play and hold up their phones at various times during the first, oh, let's say, minute of the piece. I'm going to try to divide the audience into different sections. But the idea will be to kind of create this just this immersive sound world within the concert hall that puts us in the mind of being outdoors, essentially. And I think in that acoustic is going to be actually quite amazing.
Well, I was thinking, so the rehearsal the other night when we did this, this also happens in the orchestra.
Yes.
So we get to have our smartphones, whatever, our devices on stage. And I was just listening to the collective sound in that. And even though a lot of these are electronic sounds, they really do sound like birds. And collectively, it's actually a very beautiful sound. You wouldn't think it from just hearing the file by itself.
No, you play the file by itself and you're thinking, what is all this? But when it is in a reverberant space, and when you have, you know, in the case of the orchestra, 60 people, in the case of the audience, you know, 1,200 people doing this, it really does work beautifully and creates this, you just feel like you're in the rainforest,
right,
I suppose.
Right. And the title, I mean, it's Passacaglia, but it's the secret of wind and birds. So that whole bird effect is part of the...
Yes, I suppose I should have mentioned that to start off. So here's another Passacaglia, by the way. I mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
So there is a Passacaglia theme here, which is first played for us by the trombone in this piece. And we eventually all play it. And over top of that, there are these moments where the effect of birds is created. He also asks the strings to from time to time improvise on, what is it, first ocean sounds and then wind sounds and then bird, whatever that may mean to you. And again, that's a collective effect that when a lot of people on stage are doing it, really does create a sense of being
outside.
We get
to whisper.
Yes, that's right. That's the other thing. You get to do stage whispers like this all together. And you get to snap your fingers, slap your instruments with the palms of your hands.
That's
what
right,
else? Oh, you get to whistle?
We whistle, yeah.
So there's all kinds of things going on. And occasionally you actually play notes.
There are notes that are part of it too. And if there's any aspect of this that seems like, oh man, is this like one of those weird pieces? The music itself is beautiful.
It is beautiful.
It's a very approachable work.
No question. I think his work with films and so on comes through. It's a tuneful, listenable piece for sure. And on top of that, though, since we had the pictures at an exhibition idea in the second half, it occurred to me that why couldn't we kind of expand this first piece to include a visual element as well, and have maybe pictures, if you will, or photographs of wind and birds. We're creating sonic impressions of these. What about visual impressions of these creatures? And so I approached Neil Johnson, well-known photographer in the Shreveport-Bossier, and asked him if he would be able to kind of champion some local photographers and collect images that they might have of birds or the sky or things that suggested the wind, which is, as he pointed out, a very difficult thing to photograph since it's not visible. But he was great. He reached out to local photographers and collected hundreds of images, and then sorted through them and found some of the ones that he thought best fit the different segments of the music that are most suitable for this. And then we have arranged them in order, and we're going to be showing them on the screens behind the walls behind the orchestra, more or less throughout those moments in the piece when that is appropriate. So we've got lots of senses being stimulated in this first concert, and I'm very glad that it involves a collaboration with some of our local colleagues in the creative community here in Shreveport.
So this concert, which has the Don and the Shostakovich Violin Concerto and the Mussorgsky Pictures at an exhibition, of course, is tomorrow evening, 7:30 p.m. And you know, it's nothing we do in music at least in my opinion, probably yours, is ever routine. But this, there are so many special elements to this concert that I think you'll just have a heightened experience in every way, from both the different sounds, along with the great music, and of course the visuals that that Michael's been talking about. So tickets, you just go to ShreveportSymphony.com. If you want to call, you can call 318-227-8863. And again, a reminder, this is at First Baptist Church in Shreveport. Beautiful church, beautiful performing venue, great acoustics. So there's so much that is special about this, and of course for the rest of the season, that you don't want to miss this. This is more than just listening to music. It is an entirely enveloping experience.
No question. And I did want to mention also, it's a big weekend for us. The next day we have a concert featuring the first of our Knoll Foundation Chamber Music Series concerts. That is happening on Sunday at 3 o'clock at Anderson Auditorium, on the Centenary campus there, the School of Music. And that's going to feature music of Johannes Brahms and Robert Schumann and Clara Schumann, who form a very kind of important triumvirate in the Romantic era. And it features our new principal cellist, Kathleen Long, but also our principal clarinetist, Jake Hale, and the winner of the Weidman competition from last year, Mei Li, one of two winners, mm-hmm. who will actually be joining us later in our season as a soloist with the orchestra. But she's first coming here to play the Brahms clarinet trio and some Clara Schumann solo works, as well as the fantasy pieces of Robert Schumann for clarinet and piano. So a lot of great music to take in this weekend.
Big weekend. Again, more information at ShreveportSymphony.com, or of course you can call 318-227-8863. That translates to T-U-N-E. I've always liked that. Michael Butterman, music director of the Shreveport Symphony, thanks so much for being here this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. Break a leg this weekend.